Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology and personalities in political life. 2023 was politically another wild roller coaster of a ride, with broken pledges, strikes, by-elections aplenty, even a coronation in the UK, the war in Ukraine continuing overseas, and a brutal development to the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict. To help me ease into 2024 and to think about what is more than likely going to be a general election year, I am delighted to be joined by political commentator Ali Mirage. Hello, Ali.
Hello, Lucy. Great to be with you.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, you have your sort of antennae across lots of different areas of life, because I know you've got interests in sort of financial services and also you're very interested in global affairs, not just UK politics. How would you sum up 2023?
I mean, I think it's been a very challenging year on a number of fronts. I mean, firstly, economically, I think you can see some of the issues that we've had in terms of actually getting growth going in the economy. The great thing about 2023 from a financial perspective has been that we have not tipped into recession. And I think if you go back to the beginning of the year, that was certainly not a foregone conclusion by any means whatsoever. Now, interest rate rises have continued to happen, and the Bank of England in its last meeting decided to keep those rates flat. The big question is going to be going forward whether those rates, for how long they're going to remain where they are at 5.25%, and when they might begin to come down. But it's interesting because the key thing that the Bank of England is still concerned about is inflationary pressures in the economy, and the fact that that inflationary pressure has also fed through to wages. So they want to see some reduction of those pressures in wages occurring, whilst also balancing the prospects of a recession, which is always those dark clouds we see always looming on the horizon. So I think that's the first thing economically. I think politically, it's again been a very, very difficult year politically. If you go back to the beginning, I mean, Rishi Sunak came in towards the back end of the previous year, tried to hit the ground running in January with five pledges that he made around reducing NHS waiting lists, stopping the boats, trying to grow the economy, getting inflation down, amongst other things. And it's been really, really hard. I mean, yes, inflation has come down to now 4.6% from its high of 10% at the beginning of the year. But if you look at other pledges like stopping the boats, I mean, that's not going particularly well. You're now seeing ongoing turbulence again with the ruling Conservative Party that really, frankly, has become ungovernable. I mean, it's basically back to the old Maastricht days, back to the old Brexit debates yet again. And essentially, I do feel for the Prime Minister in one way, that he's dealing with a party that's increasingly unruly, probably needs a decent spell in opposition. So I think both economically and politically, there have been challenges on the horizon.
But I'm glad you took us back to the beginning of the year, actually, because I was thinking, too, about that and how we had the Windsor framework quite early on. And
right.
People felt that that had really played to Rishi's strengths of hard work, being across the detail, and that in a way his strengths would, only strengthen. You know, they would go from strength to strength.
Yeah.
So where do you think it went wrong for him? Is it that actually temperamentally or in a personality way, you know, it isn't just events, because everyone does say, oh, events, dear boy, events, but actually was it something to do with Rishi himself that made things unravel?
Well, it's very interesting that you mentioned the Windsor framework, because I agree with you, it did play to his strengths. And you hear all that noise that was going on about the movement between goods between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, all of those issues, the fact that we were in really a standoff with the EU on this point. And Rishi Sunak, to his great credit, actually found a way through. Now, he is a former investment banker. He knows how to cut a deal. He is across the detail. He's very hardworking, extremely diligent, puts the hours in, which, frankly, too few people actually do. So all credit to him there. The thing with Rishi is also this, however, is that he's had a very gilded path to the top. Now, he became an MP in 2015. Now, this is no criticism of him because he's exceptionally bright, exceptionally hardworking, and very clever. But the problem is that you also need, in politics, as in other fields, to do your apprenticeship. And part of doing your apprenticeship used to be that you used to be able to fight a seat, or used to have to, rather, fight a seat for Parliament that you really couldn't win, what we called a no-hoper. Then you would go on to a marginal seat, and then you would eventually get a super safe seat. Now, Rishi has not had to deal with that. He's gone straight into Richmond in Yorkshire, one of the safest seats in the country. Great on him. He's clearly a very impressive individual, no doubt about it. I mean, every self-respecting Asian in this country has probably been berated by their mother, as I have been, for being an underperformer, right? So thanks a lot for that, Prime Minister. But part of the problem is when you have gone through the ringer and done all these different types of seats and really fought battles with people that have been rather unpleasant to you, mostly within your own party, it prepares you. It's a bit like doing an apprenticeship. You do not appoint a first-year medical student to perform open-heart surgery. And the problem with politics nowadays is there are too many people at the top of it who have had very little actual, real, hardcore political experience on the way. So I think Rishi is suffering from that, in my view, because he hasn't been through the rough and tumble for long enough. And frankly, when you're dealing with a Conservative Party that's increasingly ungovernable, you have to have those skills. So now it's beginning to tell a little bit. And I understand it from a human level. It would grate upon you that you're trying to do your best for the country. The stakes are so high, both economically, for people's jobs, for the future of our country. And yet you're having to deal with a rabble in the Tory party. Unfortunately, that's the way it is. And it's beginning to tell. He's becoming increasingly exasperated, I think, understandably so. But I think he's a victim of the fact that he hasn't had a proper grounding in politics in the usual way.
So the political antennae hasn't really been
It's a good point. It's a good point. A political antennae and also the ability to have a thick skin. And I tell you, it's not easy to have a thick skin because politics is very untypical. I mean, most human beings are generally sensitive. They're caring people. They're not used to actually dealing with complete disloyalty, backstabbing, all sorts of issues going on in the parliamentary estate. That's just in Parliament. I mean, you get to members of the public who can be pretty, pretty vitriolic and nasty personally to you as well. You need to have a very thick hide for politics. It's not for everyone. And it's tough. It's a very tough job. And when you're Prime Minister, there really is nowhere to hide. You have no ability to learn on the job. You have to hit the ground running. You have to deal with all sorts of vested interests, people coming at you from different directions. And I think that is beginning to tell a little bit. I mean, look, I wish Rishi the very best. I think he's doing his utmost to try and put this country on a decent trajectory. But I also think some of the calls he's made are, in my view, of someone who doesn't have enough political experience. For example, Rwanda. I mean, Rwanda went through every court in the land, ended up in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has effectively said that this is really not workable. Rwanda is not a safe country, and we're not comfortable that people who go to Rwanda will not be returned to face persecution in their home countries. At that particular point, one may have thought that, look, the game's up, let's just go to something else. He's doubled down on it. Some people give him credit for that, but you can see the almighty row that's now occurring in the Tory party. And, you know, you could argue whether this is the right strategy or whether you should actually cut your losses. And as every decent investment banker will tell you, if things are going wrong on a position that you hold, there is a time to cut your losses and get out and move on.
And you would have thought from his Goldman Sachs days that actually he might have thought that the Rwanda policy was the one to drop, but clearly, yeah, from a polling point of view, and I wanted to get onto the polls really, because they haven't shifted. It's been 2 years since the Conservatives were ahead in any published poll. You have to go back to the beginning of December 2021 for the Conservatives to be ahead. And yet there is a theory that there is a small cohort of the electorate that are going to be influenced by issues like the small votes But the polls are not shifting, even though the Conservatives have been banging on about Rwanda for certainly the last sort of 3 to 6 months. So what on earth do you think they could do to shift the polls? Because we're going to have a general election in 2024. I gather that there was even a hint dropped at a number 10 drinks party last night that it was going to be 2024 and not 2025. So at least that rules out 1 month in 2025.
Well, indeed, indeed.
But, you know, that, so I suppose one might say, why aren't the polls shifting? I think that's pretty obvious. How do they get the polls to shift? How do you get the polls to tighten in the next, let's say, 10 months?
Well, I think that is the question that every conservative political strategist will be thinking about, including Isaac Livido, who is heading up the general election preparations for the Conservative Party, a protege of one Sir Lyndon Crosby, who was the mastermind of successive election wins, first as mayor and then later in the general election for Boris Johnson. Now, the problem is, you see, that there's a natural ebb and flow and rhythm in politics. And there comes a point where people just want to change. And if you ask the killer question, if any Labour strategist asks the killer question, what has actually changed for the better in your life over the last 13 years? If that becomes a quite difficult question to answer, the governing party is in some trouble. So there is a natural rhythm to politics. They've been in power in one way, shape or other, first as a coalition government, latterly on their own for the best part of 13 years. Any government that's been in power for longer than 10 years is going to be on a downward spiral. It's just a natural rhythm of politics. That's number one. Number two is that it's quite late in the day now, and this is not Rishi's fault. He's only come in with, you know, a couple of years to go before an election. But it's a bit late in the day now to start playing hardball on immigration, for example. And you mentioned it's an important issue, particularly for Conservative voters, which it is. But if you were someone who voted to leave the EU back in 2016 on the grounds primarily that you wanted immigration reduced, right, and you were then told by first David Cameron that it would be reduced to the tens of thousands net migration, then Theresa May followed that up. And you're now finding yourself in 2023 where in the last 2 years, net migration has been 1.3 million, treble the level it was pre-Brexit. You're thinking to yourself, what on earth is going on here? So with 1 year to go potentially before an election, I think it's too little too late for the Tories to turn this around. Now, the best hope that they have is that the economy actually moves in a positive direction. But you can read any number of reports, and the latest this morning in the Financial Times from the Chief Investment Officer of PIMCO saying that he's bearish on the UK in terms of recessionary factors next year. So the only thing that they can focus on really is hoping that the economy improves, people feel better off, they've got more money in their pocket, taxes come down, they're reducing national insurance, so that's going to kick in from next April. They're hoping that that will be make an impact. And also, in the budget, whenever that comes, again, there may be further tax cuts to come. But I feel that whatever they do now is going to be too little too late. It may make some difference on the fringes, but I don't think it's really going to make a massive dent in that poll lead that Labour have, which is anywhere between 13 to 20 points.
In which case, if you had one piece of advice for each of Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak in the next few months before the general election is called, what would that advice be to both of them?
My advice to Keir Starmer is, we don't really know what you stand for, but that's actually a very good strategy. Because if he lays out in too much detail exactly what the flesh on the bones of his policy is, he will be shot down. He's set a direction of travel. He's detoxified the Labour Party brand, which was completely unelectable last time around when you had two issues, Jeremy Corbyn, and you also had the Brexit frustration amongst the British people that the decision that they had made in 2016 was basically frustrated by Parliament for the best part of 3 years. Neither of those things are in place this time. Brexit has been done, for better or worse, and you do not have the unelectable Jeremy Corbyn there either. He has detoxified the brand. He has dealt with a lot of the anti-Semitic problems within the party. He has set out a direction of travel with his five missions, and I think that he needs to stick to the course on that and not go into too much detail at the moment, because he will be shot down. So my advice to Keir Starmer is steady she goes. My advice to Rishi Sunak is play hardball with the crazy elements of your party that are basically looking to... I mean, they're just uncontrollable. I would play hardball and I would go into them and say, look, if you want to be silly about the Rwanda plan or whatever it may be or anything else that might take your fancy, I'm going to call an election. Because I know that Christmas is coming, but the pantomime season, frankly, Lucy, I mean, the Tory party can't be a pantomime exhibition here, right? You can't have a situation where you have a fourth leader within one parliamentary term before an election is called. If Rishi Sunak goes, or if they threaten to topple him, he has to call an election. You cannot have a situation where you would have another leadership challenge. It's simply unacceptable. I think you will have people marching on Downing Street, frankly, if that happens, and rightly so. So I think he needs to play hardball with his backbenchers and say, look, I've gone as far as I can on Rwanda, on other things, this far, no further. If you want to destabilize and topple my government, that's fine. But you are going to have a general election. And frankly, where we are in the polls, you're highly likely, many of you, to lose your seats. I would play hardball with them. And that's the only card he has. And I also, by the way, if I had been Rishi, I would have vetoed Boris Johnson's resignation honours list and Liz Truss's as well. Because if you leave in disgrace from a position of public authority, which is Prime Minister, the least that people would expect is you do not get rewarded by handing out a bunch of gongs and places in the House of Lords for life to some of your chums, basically when you've left in utter humiliation and disgrace. I think this gives a really bad impression of politics. Liz Truss, who was the summer internship Prime Minister for 49 days, should not get any peerages in her resignation on this list at all. It's a disgrace. So I think Rishi Sunak needs to show a bit of backbone on this, and I think he needs to face down his backbenchers who are causing all sorts of problems for him.
Well, that's amazing, because I think that last point speaks to something that a lot of British people find very important, which is fairness. And my sense is that the next election is going to be, on some level, based around fairness. Do we feel that the government of the day has been fair, but particularly in terms of things like taxes and, you know, stealth taxes that have snuck up so that people have had that fiscal drag problem of paying more tax without... you know, taxes going up, and as you say, gongs for people who don't really seem to need them or merit them. That I think could be something that plays into people's subconscious when they go into the general election, which leads me to my last question, really, which is, what's your gut feel as to when that general election will be?
I would expect it to be in late autumn, Lucy. I don't think that Rishi Sunak will go to January 2025. I mean, he might do. I mean, the thing that the driver for delaying it as long as possible is that the cardinal rule in politics in general is the longer you wait, something might turn up, something positive might happen, right? The Tory party might actually get its senses back, the economy might turn the corner, things might be looking rosier, the Rwanda plan might get off the ground, all sorts of things can happen the longer you delay. So I would expect this, and my base case, to use banking terminology, to be late autumn, probably late October, early November. You've got to think about the party conference season, but it might happen sort of after that. You could say probably November, but there is an outside chance that it could actually happen much sooner, if the reason comes to pass, as I mentioned earlier, that Rishi Sunak has literally had enough. They're trying to scupper his Rwanda plan. They're digging their heels in his backbenches on the right of the party, the so-called five families, mafioso-style nonsense that's going on. And he actually calls their bluff and says, well, I'm going to go to the country now because I've got nothing further to lose. So there is an outside chance it could happen, but I expect, all things being equal, it probably to happen later, probably in November, because I never bought off on the May election thing, because Rishi Sunak, whatever you think, and however difficult the job is, it's still a big thing being Prime Minister. Not many people get to do it. And it's still a lot more, you know, summits to come and dinners to come and connections to be made. So I think he'll hang on for as long as he can.
Ali Mirage, Your finger on the pulse as ever, brilliantly insightful. Thank you very much indeed for being my final guest of 2023 on The Couch.
An absolute pleasure, Lucy. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
And to you.